C2A. Number 13B.
So, after all of these very incisive questions, which all turn around that sentence that we had before, that it gives all for Christ or truth, she now shows what would happen if we could say to these questions, yes. If we could, with our full heart, say, yes, we can say yes to this question. We have actually given all for Christ's truth. He says, if all, whoever partook of the sacrament had really commemorated the suffering of Jesus and drunk his cup, what would they have done if they had said yes to those questions? They would have revolutionized the world. There we have it. There we have it. We always feel that Christian Science should revolutionize the world. And we are absolutely disillusioned when we see how little we have achieved. How little we have revolutionized. All we have done is that we have, in a certain way, revolutionized our thinking and perhaps the thinking and consciousness of a few students that were going along that way. But we have not yet revolutionized the world. And she says, this is not because you don't understand enough. That is not because you have not studied like hell and put your head into the books from morning to night. She says, that is because we didn't say yes to that question at every state of our understanding. Why didn't we say, yes, I give all for Christ's truth. I really give for Christ everything I have. I put the Christ, I put the truth, I put really the whole subject of Christian Science in its first place, and everything must take second, third, and fourth place. But not the other way around. That Christian Science is always that which then can be used as a nice hobby at the sideway. That's not working. And that's why this has been happening, that we have not revolutionized the world. She says, if all who seek his commemoration through material symbols would take up the cross, they would heal the sick and cast out evils and preach Christ or truth to the poor, to the receptive soul, to the universe. And they would have brought in the millennium. Wow! We always are talking about the millennium that should come, and why doesn't it come, and why is the world so stupid that it cannot see the teaching of Christian Science? Why are they not aware enough? We never think that we missed the boat. That it is up to us, it's up to those who know Christian Science. It's the responsibility is on their shoulder. The government is on their shoulder, not on anybody else's. If we would have put up a good show, really, in the true sense of being giving everything to the Christ, we would have made an impact. We haven't. So we must clearly see that missing impact is not because our understanding of Christian Science is not yet big enough. It's quite big enough if we would actually accept what we are thinking with our thoughts and would incorporate that and embody that as our life attitude. Thought is not enough. Christian Science does not save the world with thinking. It saves the world through understanding, and understanding means that you stand to the truth you know, to give all for Christ's truth. Isn't it a terrific paragraph? Makes one think. I was talking just a moment ago about that momentous summer school 1949, which made such terrific impact. And I remember when that summer school was over, John Dolly said, come along in my car, we drive home. And my friends from Zurich were in the car, and John Dolly was sitting in the corner of the car. And though that occasion was, well, it was really a kind of a Pentecostal day, Pentecostal week, with such great impact. But John Dolly didn't look happy. He was sitting there in the corner, so to say, lost in his thoughts. He didn't say much. And then suddenly, out of the blue, he said, you know, Mrs. Eddy said at the end of her life, if my students had obeyed me, I might have done it. And naturally, he meant himself. He meant us. He just translated that very occasion that Mrs. Eddy could see because her students didn't understand her, didn't really make the grade the way she expected them to do. She was so disillusioned, and you know that she was quite uncertain if the idea of Christian Science would be lost again. She was not certain at all about that. And naturally, John Dolly meant the same. He meant if his student had obeyed him, he might have done it. But he could see that we didn't make it. That we didn't make it. And that was also a bitter pill. And never again did I see him as I used to see him before that summer school. He really was lost deeply in thought and was thinking about the whole idea very deeply, very much, you say, in earnest or earnestly, I don't know which one it is, deeply considering what will happen with the idea when he is no more here. You know, when I come to America, and I love to come, I really love to come. But it's a new country. America really has only begun to know something about this idea over the last, so to say, 15 years. I mean, there were individuals that knew something long before that, right from Oxford, but they all disappeared with the wind. And so, actually, the students here in America who knew about the science of Christian Science only over the last 10, 15 years, they have sometimes a wrong picture of the whole development of the idea. They see us coming, we are happy, we laugh with them, we are jolly with them most of the time. I hope I don't hurt too many people with my scientific attitude of an European. But in a way, you feel that this idea has developed in a gentle, happy way, that it was just a joy ride to flow along with the idea and see further and further, and you have forgotten that this is not so. It may be so over the last 15 years, much different than it was at the beginning when John Dolly was seeing the idea first, when he experienced what was shown in this subject. He experienced, namely, truth as mind. He began to see that mind is the creator. But in addition to this, he could see that we must give spiritual birth to the idea. That's why he constantly was presenting scientific obstetrics to the class. There is hardly a summer school that he held or any lecture he held without taking that paragraph first on scientific obstetrics, showing that we are giving birth to a spiritual idea, truth as spirit. And he was a very strong character that would reject all kinds of suggestions, that would come along and say, no, you haven't seen the idea of Christian Science. He was like a tiger that would defend this idea against all wrong suggestions and criticism. And he could free himself from the family relationship in principle and establish a new family, the family of friends who all loved the same idea. But he also had to go through truth as life, to have to take on himself all the persecution, the misrepresentation, the critics, the misunderstanding, all that he had to take on himself. He had to carry it, and you don't know anymore what those years were. You have the faintest idea what those years of trials were. You don't know it. You haven't the faintest idea what it meant, as truth, to give all for the Christ and be willing to lose everything. To lose everything. To give up everything so that the idea would not be lost and not go down. You see me here as an exponent of this idea that comes year after year. And perhaps some of you feel, well, he's a jolly nice fellow and a nice scientist. But I wouldn't be here without those first pioneers, of which you have hardly heard, those first pioneers to whom really I owe it that I could make the grade at all. Those pioneers in the beginning or end of the 30s, beginning of the 40s, when we had the years of trial, when we were excommunicated from the church, and at that time, 40 years ago, to be excommunicated from the church meant go to hell, and you have to go to hell. You would lose all your friends, all your patients, and therefore all the income that you had as a practitioner. And if we wouldn't have had just a few of those Christians who were really Christian, who may not have had perhaps the academic and intellectual faculties that is perhaps necessary to present the idea in its clarity, but who had that Christian attitude which said, I give everything for Christ. You know them perhaps by name, like Mimi Bütikofer, like Betty Schurter, like my sister Millie Rudin. Their names are still on the compendium. If they hadn't been, I wouldn't be. If they hadn't done what they did, they had no penny in their pocket. They had no penny in their check account. But they were willing to be excommunicated for the truth, though they knew that they would lose their whole income from one day to the next. And we lost everything in the material world, everything. But we couldn't help but be true to truth as truth here, to give to the Christ idea what the Christ idea demanded. If I wouldn't have done it, and if I wouldn't have done it, I think for all my life I would have felt to be a traitor, and I couldn't have lived with it. If I would have left the idea because the income was cut off, because I was still a greenhorn, very young, without much really practice experience, a real greenhorn, and yet to say, okay, I lose everything, I gave up my job and said, this is now the time where I'm needed, where we have to stand for truth, or that idea will just go down. Who remembers those pioneers? Who knows about those pioneers? You sit here and listen to me and you feel it's a nice presentation, but do you know that it was through bleeding footsteps, and that there were pioneers who with the blood of their heart paid for this progress? Have you any idea what the price was? I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't have made it. I know that I would have been too weak. I was alone in Zurich. I had no friends in Zurich. I was working in another town. I started from scratch with those wonderful Christian characters, real Christian fighters for truth, that did not ask what the price is. They only ask what is the truth, and I stand for the truth. That they knew. So let's see that somehow that era of where everyone is willing to give all for truth is not lost. That we don't think that happened years ago, now we can have a joyride. Let's see that at every moment everybody is called and say, do you give all for Christ, truth? Or do you have some reservations? We were willing to be excommunicated. We were willing to lose everything. And we did lose everything. There was nothing left. We really could say, as that child of which Mitridates speaks, I have lost everything except the Christ. That we haven't lost, that we gained. And there is always a lot of gain in the material loss. So, can we see if that whole atmosphere of the consciousness of truth is not kept alive, is not a life concept, that then the whole idea of Christian Science loses its essence, and it will not be able to survive. But it also shows that though one has not a field that is ready in which we can work, we can build up something that out really of the ashes can grow something new. You see, this was in Switzerland very different. We couldn't just step into the field that was prepared. Whereas in England, John Dawley had hundreds and hundreds in the summer school, was a big field of hundreds of people, so that new workers just could step into a field that was prepared. We had to build it up from scratch. And I had to prove that an idea is like Hosea says, is like a seed that is sown, and it begins to grow. And that it only needs one thing to be one with the Christ idea and not to give in to any suggestion. He goes on and shows, through all the disciples experienced, they became then more spiritual and understood better what the Master had taught. This is an interesting statement, because in theory we say that if we understand more, we can make better demonstration. A demonstration follows understanding. But the opposite is also true under circumstances here, that we say through what we experience as demonstration, we gain a higher understanding. And so the circle closes. It's like a cybernetic circle that says, yes, understanding gives demonstration, but demonstration again gives more understanding. Because the moment we experience our consciousness and the working of our consciousness, the more we are rooted in that understanding, the more we are convinced in that understanding, the more that understanding is spiritual reality and tangible reality for us, and therefore the more that understanding becomes spiritual understanding. So Jesus' resurrection was also their resurrection. Showing what Mrs. Eddy started out, that he said Jesus did his work for individual and collective purposes. That's not the way Mrs. Eddy says. Thank God I never know a single sentence by heart. I only know what it means. His mission was both individual and collective, therefore showing that an individual demonstration has always a collective effect, that there we always touch with our consciousness the whole universe, and what we demonstrate is also teaching. We teach then through life experience and teach through demonstration in order to get more understanding. It helped them to rise themselves and others from spiritual dullness and blind belief in God into the perception of infinite possibilities. God. Can you see? Can you see what she says? She says, if we really go through that experience where Christ says, are you giving all up for Christ? And where then we do that and answer those six questions and say, yes, I'm going to do it. I rely on the Christ. That begins to revolutionize our consciousness, but it also begins to revolutionize collectively the universe. And what it does, that it opens up our perception of infinite possibilities. Can you see how the realm of truth is opening up here, that the restrictions that we put on our consciousness fall, and that we suddenly begin to see really the infinite possibilities, because for truth all is possible. So that the tone of truth as truth really is magnificent. Yes, so she ends it up and say, they needed this quickening, for soon their dear master would rise again in the spiritual realm of reality. You see, he closed at the point of truth as life forever any concession to matter. So what is left? That he would usher in really the spiritual realm of reality and ascend above their apprehension. As the reward of his faithfulness, he would disappear to material sense in that change which has since been called the ascension. Well, if we look over this whole tone and say, now, what did Mrs. Eddy actually want to tell us in truth as truth at the point of the truth as life, where she showed that with the Last Supper, Jesus gave up his last concessions to matter, then there is room for truth. Then we have made room for the whole of truth. And so she starts in first by that holy struggle. It's now no more a warfare of spirit. It's now a holy struggle where the human element struggles with the divine, where the human does not want to give up itself for the divine, and we have to struggle until finally we are willing to give up the human for the divine, and are willing to give all to Christ truth, to the Christ principle. And so in order to be able to demonstrate that, we have to look into our heart and have to ask ourselves, do I really want that? Am I really willing to show forth that attitude. And she says, and if you do, and as Jesus did it, then that will revolutionize the world. It will usher in the millennium and will open up the vision of this infinite possibilities. So that we feel that our consciousness now is wide open for the influx of love. That would be then the tone of truth as love, which we will take right afterwards.